12 years ago, Sylvia Harris was an inpatient at a psychiatric facility in Virginia. Manic depression had taken away most of the goodness in her life, including custody of her three young children. Today, after a remarkable series of personal trials through medication, meditation, and perseverance, she has effectively managed her mental illness and now lives her dream of being a professional horse racing jockey. She's one of the few female African-American jockeys in the sport's history, and at age 40, she's one of the oldest rookies as well. In December at Hawthorne Racetrack in Chicago, she won her first race, making her only the second black female jockey ever to visit the winner's circle. Joining us now by phone from Chicago is Sylvia Harris herself. Hi, Sylvia.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Allison and Bill?
Hey, good. Doing just great.
Doing great. Thank you for being with us. Let's begin in the middle of your life and talk about when you first realized something wasn't quite right with you in your battle with manic depression. When did you realize that you had that problem?
Well, you know, I was 19, and what had actually happened was I stayed up for about 2 or 3 days. And, you know, I just kept getting more and more, quote-unquote, I guess you could call it just not right. You know, if you don't sleep for 2 or 3 days, your mind starts racing. I started writing a bunch of poetry and just having these erratic thoughts, and actually had a friend of mine finally take me to the hospital because I couldn't go to sleep. I just couldn't. And the thoughts were so incoherent. There was no train. It wasn't synchronized. It was just erratic. And the behavior wasn't so bad. It was just the thought process that was awry. And then we went to the hospital, and they kept me in. That point, I think it was 48 hours, 48 or 72 hours. And actually, the first time I was released afterwards without being medicated. I had been medicated in the hospital but was not released with medication. And actually was okay for about a year and then had another episode.
And then then later on, you fast forward a few years.
Right.
In 1995, you wind up in a psychiatric hospital in Virginia. What happened that time, and why did you wind up in a more extensive stay in the hospital?
That was, I think, between going through a separation, custody battle, being a single parent of three children, being on welfare. I think all of those things together, the stress level became unbearable. And as with most of your, you know, illnesses, there is a stress factor that's involved. And I think that just pushed me over the edge. And that was a very long stay.
Can you tell us how long, approximately? You say very long?
Yeah, that was about 3 months that time. And I had only been in maybe at the longest 2 or 3 days to get stabilized, and then they would release you. And that was, you know, the majority of the time in California. In Virginia, it was very different. I was afraid I would never get out, to be honest with you. But out of that, I got on new medication, which was very helpful because the lithium was not really working at all times.
Right. Now, you wind up a few years after that, you're in Florida, and as I understand it, working in the horse industry. Central Florida is where they breed a lot of horses. And you wind up with a stolen car. Your car gets taken away, and therefore you can't work. Therefore, you didn't have any money. And therefore, you couldn't pay rent. Is that all fairly accurate?
Yeah. It was basically a walking nightmare.
and you wind up homeless. How did you survive in Orlando, Florida, with no home?
You know what? Whatever car was parked that you could get into. There were quite a few, believe it or not, areas where abandoned cars had been parked. And there was a culture, let's put it that way, of homeless people that you quickly become attached to because they know how to survive that way. I didn't. This is my first time being homeless like that. So there were a couple truck cabs. You found out where the local shelters were. If you could get in and get a bed, that was fine. If you couldn't, then you went to a car. You knew who was serving lunch. You knew who served breakfast and dinner. So you made your rounds that way. I'd go and stand and wait in line to get work. They had a lot of the temporary agencies for day labor. sometimes you'd get hired, sometimes you wouldn't. And if you got hired, you kept your money as long as you could, made it last. Maybe you try to get a room for the night if you could, but it was completely hopeless. And if it were not for my faith and the determination that I had been taught over, at this point, you know, almost 19 years or so, you didn't give up. You found a way, and that everything you went through was for a reason, even if you didn't know what that reason was at the time you were going through it.
So your faith gets you through what you have to call the low point in your life there, homeless in Florida and sleeping in cars and eating in soup kitchens and so forth.
Right.
When did it occur to you that you wanted to ride horses professionally, wanted to race horses professionally? When did that occur to you, and how did you wind up in Chicago, Illinois, where it doesn't appear from your biography that you had any particular connection?
None whatsoever. It was completely an accident, a detour. I've had many detours. This one has turned out to be the best one so far. Be honest with you, I grew up in Santa Rosa, California, and there is a Sonoma County Fair that runs there during the summer, and they have horse racing for part of the fair. And I remember as a little girl going, I was always animal crazy, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, the horses was just it. That was, you know, the like heaven to me. And we'd go over to the horse races there. We'd also go to Golden Gate Field and the Bay Meadows. My father would bet. And I just remember, like, hanging on the fence and just watching the horses as they ran by and listening to their hooves, you know, the dirt flying up. And that's what I wanted to do. I always ran track and field from a very, very young age and was very, just naturally, I guess you could say, gifted, talented, inclined that way. And so I think there was a connection between myself being a runner and the horses running. And I wanted to be a jockey. I wanted to ride horses.
And so you wind up, as I understand it, you wound up in Saskatchewan, out in the Canadian prairie, right?
I tried to go up there because there was an ad that I answered for jockeys. Now, you know, I get up there, and all of a sudden all the paperwork's not complete, and it costs a lot of money. I wasn't told this when I went up to the border. So I stayed up there. We tried to figure out what to do, and there was just no possible way. I wasn't going to ask my family. You know, number one, most of them don't have that kind of money to just give to me. You have to realize my life has been a series of, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this, jumping around.
Right. So you don't.
Never anything being cohesive.
So it's a little more complicated than simply saying, can I have some money to pursue my dream?
Right.
Right.
So where's she going now?
Right.
What is she going to be this time?
Okay. So you're stuck up there in the Canadian prairie, out in the middle of who knows where.
Right.
And you can't really break in as a jock up there.
I couldn't even get across the border, man. I couldn't even make it across the border. I had to turn around.
So there you are. So there you are in the northern tier.
And I'm curious. There had to have been some person, some angel, some person who intervened that helped you gain your entry point into this exclusive sport, this exclusive area.
Well, you know, I waited for about a week, and what I was going to have to do was go back to Michigan to the consulate and get paperwork finished there to the extent of quite a bit of money. So I'm like, forget it. At this point, I have left Florida and driven all the way up to North Portal. So now I'm like, you know what, enough of the dreams, now a reality check. You've left work, you've left your family again, and look, you're getting stopped. There's another obstacle. So you know what I did? I went to the library because I don't know what to do. I don't have enough money to make it back to my father's. I don't have enough money. I have like $80 at this point. So I went to the nearest library to try to regroup, refocus, and I went online, and I went to, you know, basically an inspirational site that I utilized, and I had to gather my strength again because I just wanted to sit in the car and not move. I wanted to not move because it seemed like every move that I took ended up to be wrong.
And you wind up in Chicago, Illinois at Hawthorne,
exactly.
Hawthorne Racetrack.
Exactly. Actually, Arlington was open at the time. I was at Arlington Park.
And you are doing what there? You're working with the horses? You're a jockey? What happens when you get to Chicago?
Well, to be honest with you, when I get to Chicago, I couldn't find anybody at first to give me a mount. I'm on the backside. I've skipped my license. Thank goodness the girl Shannon in the office gave me a few dollars off the application fee, and I was able to go get a hamburger for the day. But it took me 2 days before somebody would actually give me a mount. The meet had just opened. There were quite a few riders there. And you have to realize, at this point, I've only been at horse farms and at Charlestown, West Virginia, for about 4 months. I don't know a lot about galloping older horses. And so here I'm at Arlington. I'm intimidated. This place is beautiful. I feel like I've walked into paradise when I look at Arlington Park. And then I'm thinking I'm not good enough to even gallop here, which is just the process of taking the horses in the morning to get them ready for the races in the afternoon. But finally, a lady named Betty Gabriel gave me a shot. I started galloping horses for her and a lady named Mary Zimmerman and a few other people in that barn, and slowly built my business up to where I could make a living galloping horses at one of the most exclusive, beautiful racetracks, not in just this country, in the world.
And how do you get from being, so essentially you're working the horses, you're warming the horses up, and finally somebody says, all right, kid, you get to ride in a race. When did that happen? How did that feel?
Well, actually, it's a longer process than that. I kind of had shoved that aside, and especially after a few people found out my age, they were like, you're better off to just keep galloping. Don't become a jockey, because now some people are encouraging me. I've met all the top jockeys that are riding at the time when the Arlington Million is going off. I'm getting everybody's autographs. I'm like a little kid in the candy store. Now I want to be a jockey again, right? So I start working for Jimmy DeVito. He starts letting me come out of the gate, breezing horses, working out horses, because you have to have more, let's say, more experience breaking and breezing and working horses from the gate, going out with other jocks. Charlie Livis, they let me breeze a lot of horses. So I feel like I'm getting stronger. I feel like I'm getting better. I think I'm ready. And then a couple people discourage me. Some people encourage me. And I'm making enough money now to where I can take care of myself for the first time in a long time without asking family for help. And I kind of get comfortable. I get complacent again and forget about being a jockey. So just be happy that you're around horses at this track. Be happy that you have enough work. Well, then this summer, what happened is someone asked me to participate with a project called Make-A-Wish Foundation. And I met a young girl named Samantha who was 17 at the time, terminal cancer, and that was her dream, was to have a racehorse and to be a rider. She had always ridden her whole life. She had a type of bone cancer, and the doctors told her she could not ride horses anymore because it was too dangerous. It would, you know, make her worse off, and she had her arm in a cast at the time. When they came out to do some of the filming for the project, they asked me to speak, and all that just came through was that, you know, we're not given the next minute. You have to go out there and take your dreams and make them come true, because you don't know if you have tomorrow, next month, you know, and if you waste time, think that you can't do something, or I give up. You may not get a second chance to go after it.
So this young girl really inspires you to go back
once again
and find your dream. We have to wrap up in just a minute, but as you look back over the course of your life, are you amazed at where you are right now?
It's like a dream every morning when I get up. I've got a huge smile on my face, and usually most people, when you get up this early, you're kind of grumpy until you have a couple cups of coffee.
I don't know what you're talking about.
As soon as I see the horse, yeah, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But as soon as I see the horses, even if I am in somewhat of a down mood or a little bit, you know, agitated, stressed out just from daily living, as soon as I'm around the horses, it's gone. It's like they completely remove all of that negativity from you.
Sylvia
and
Harris.
Just enjoy. Thank you.
Sylvia Harris is a professional horse racing jockey.
A winning
yes.
professional horse
Congrats
jockey.
Congrats on everything you've accomplished. And
thank you so much.
It's an
much
inspirational
for
story.
That. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're always available to you online, npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart along with Bill Wolf. We'll talk to you real soon.